interviews, news, and views. You're listening to State of the Nation with Timothy Shea and Brian McClain on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome to State of the Nation on today's News Talk. For Brian McClain, I'm Timothy Shea. We're coming to you live from Central Texas and Central New York. You can visit us on the web at tntradio.live. Brian, welcome to State of the Nation.
Happy Friday. Good to see you, Timothy.
It's more like State of Insanity. We had another genius of the left set himself on fire outside the New York City courthouse where Donald Trump's juror selection, concluded today. This man, of course, was a Bernie bro. He was against all the capitalism, climate change, all the tropes. And this poor guy doused himself, and people thought it was like a performance art piece. And all of a sudden, he holds out a lighter at chest height. And people started freaking out, realizing what he was going to do. And they were screaming at him not to. And he did. And boom. Apparently, Brian, you could feel the flames from 100 feet away.
Yeah. Well, another horrific display today. And I saw his last, TikTok video or whatever with his little call for revolution there. And of course, we've got the manifestos, the True History of the World Haunted Carnival Edition being distributed now.
Yep.
I don't know what to say, man. I guess when we start seeing people douse themselves with stuff these days, we got to do a running tackle because this is just horrific.
Well, either that or we need to make it the new TikTok challenge, right? I mean, if these people are that committed to the cause, Brian, who am I? Who am I to stop them?
It's just a sad state, man.
We joke, but yeah, I mean, obviously I'm joking. I don't wish ill on anyone like that. Clearly, this man was mentally ill, but how is he different from anyone else on the left? They're all mentally ill, demonstrably mentally ill.
We've got a lot of mentally ill people that aren't even political or, that are just suffering media modification machines and cybernetic feedback loops and that hurting themselves with every decision that they make right now and the worldview that's been installed in them. Many of these worldviews, extremely toxic, causing people to do a lot of self-harm. But yeah, unfortunately, when we see the extreme wing of one or the other, and it goes along with extreme mental illness, and yeah, this is what we get.
Yeah, absolutely. And I saw a study recently that 60% of women under the age of 40 suffer from one mental illness or another. 60%, Brian. That doesn't happen organically. America was never like this.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, if you go seek help for any of these things, you're immediately handed an SSRI, an antipsychotic, right. All these different things that complicate the entire, syndrome that they're dealing with. And oftentimes there are much better fixes like changes in lifestyle, changes in job, changes in diet, sunlight.
Exercise.
Exercise.
Exercise is the number one. The correlation between increasing exercise and reducing depression is been established. In fact, on Monday, we're going to be talking with someone who's working to get the Veterans Administration mandated to provide written informed consent to vets, because what they often do to these vets, Brian, is they give them out pills like candy and they never tell them what the side effects are. So then when all of a sudden the veteran experiences dizziness, vision blurriness, all the side effects of these things, reduced sexual drive, etc., they think that they are the problem, and that is contributing largely to the number of military suicides we're having.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And it's an atrocious number. It's a horrific number. I've worked with some veterans that have given me some inside information on all that, their personal accounts. And it is heartbreaking every time I go down that topic. But it's a very important one. And, we all want a magical fix and we all would like to trust our doctors and our mental health professionals. But sometimes that magic fix is just going to make things worse.
Absolutely. And that's why we at DeploymentCigars.com have our Chaplain Cigar Therapy Program. It's been doing wonders literally around the world. And had to give a plug for that, because these kind of things are need to be brought to light. We had Sergeant John Bass self-inflict. He was one of our members, and it's something that needs to end. Clearly what the Pentagon is doing isn't working, so we need to start looking at other things. One thing we don't want you to look at is other forms of media. Do you know there are many ways you can watch or listen to TNT? You can stream us directly from our website on your desktop, tablet, or mobile device. You can download our app from the App Store. We even stream live on X, YouTube, Rumble, and Odyssey. We've got you covered on today's news talk. TNT.
Giving you what you want.
I want the facts.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Students on both the left and the right came together to hear education czar and Oklahoma Superintendent Ryan Walters speak at a town hall event hosted by Turning Point USA students at Oklahoma State University in Stillwell, Oklahoma this week. The event ran for 45 minutes as planned, although a group of disruptive students made it very difficult for other students both to hear the speaker and engage with questions of their own. The obstreperous protesters made it nearly impossible for students to have a civil Q&A discussion. But as he said during the event, Ryan didn't back down to the woke mob, contrary to how the media tried to spin the story. Superintendent Ryan Walters joins us with the 411 on OSU. Welcome to State of the Nation, Ryan.
Well, hey, I appreciate you guys having me on. And I mean, it's been fascinating to watch what the left is willing to do to silence conservatives on college campuses. And we got to see that up front and personal this week at OSU.
Well, and what's disturbing to me is their feeling of entitlement to do so. When I was in college, we had an amazing speakers bureau, right? We heard from Richard Nixon henchmen. We heard from Timothy Leary, who proposed the absurd theory that civilization arose in China and moved progressively westward until it hit California, and there's no further west to go. So California represented the height of human civilization. That literally was his thesis for the talk. And we didn't shout them down. We didn't catcall. We listened, and then we engaged in some rather vigorous Q&A back and forth after the speech. But what bothers me now is the feeling of entitlement on the left to shout down any speaker with whom they disagree.
Well, and you know, and I started off by talking about, listen, let's, you disagree, we're gonna have plenty of time for a back and forth, we can have a discussion. Well, that was very clear from the beginning. They wanted to shout me down, and I even asked them, I go, what are you afraid of? Like, are my ideas that scary that you guys can't even listen to a speaker lay out a case, lay out a position? But again, more than happy to disagree with. We're all fine with that. As a matter of fact, I think it's very healthy. But that's not what they want anymore. And it's amazing to see that's not classic liberalism, right? What we're seeing is a radical left-wing movement that's saying, no, we don't want engagement of ideas. We don't want the vetting of ideas. We don't want a back and forth of ideas. We want a totalitarian view of it's our way or the highway. And if you don't completely align with ours, we're going to shut you down, try to intimidate you, try to block people from coming in. It's just really outrageous.
This seems to be standard operating procedure these days, sort of 101 rules for radicals, Sal Alinsky sort of behavior. You know, this has been going on for quite some time now. I'd say, if I had to guess, I'd say a decade, somewhere around a decade. It's become sort of an ever-growing, tactic that is engaged in, and we've seen it in, you know, it escalates to various forms too, and sometimes it escalates all the way to violence. Riley Gaines had a pretty scary experience at a university recently, and it all starts with the shouting. So I don't know, does that concern you when we've got like this, you know, ever-growing history of this kind of thing getting a little bit out of hand?
Well, we are seeing it ramp up quite a bit. You know, there's a lot of organization. You got a lot of these national groups that engage with the college students to make it much more of an aggressive situation. The left will stop at nothing to silence the other positions. And I want to point this out to your audience. And we're a very red state. All 77 counties voted for Donald Trump twice. And to see it, even in our college campuses, there is no state that's safe from this. This is a radical left-wing mentality where they push their way in and they will demand anyone bow to their woke mentality, mindset, belief system. And so even in a red state, they are absolutely still having tremendous control over college campus, tremendous control over what's being said. And I will give a lot of credit. Hey, there were a couple hundred conservative students in the room. They're like, no, hey, we're here. You're not going to intimidate us from coming. We are absolutely standing our ground here. We actually want a back and forth. As a matter of fact, multiple times, the conservative students chimed in and said, can you not just listen to him for a minute? And we can go back and forth. They want to know part of it. They shouted down those students as well.
Amazing. And what, sorry, Timbo, what is it about you that you were going to say that had them so upset?
Well, I was going to talk about our education policies, and what we've done is we've acknowledged that there's truth, that there's only two genders, that we're not going to bow down to any kind of ideology in the classroom. We've put that in practice. We've actually had tremendous successes. We've turned around over 120 schools already that have jumped off of our F list. Our biggest school has now seen dramatic academic improvement, but they reject all of these things because they want an indoctrination engaged in their education system. So they are very mad that I've acknowledged that we're not going to talk about transgenderism in schools. We're not going to push that there's 84 genders. We're not going to do that. And so because of that, they've tried to shout me down wherever I go, including a college campus. It should be an incredible space for you to share ideas. And frankly, the ideas I'm sharing aren't very outside the norm at all. As a matter of fact, I would say pretty well common sense there.
What we're seeing is the fruit of Saul Alinsky. Right. They are literally following the rules for radical playbook. They arrived with the questions in hand. They arrived with printed sheets of the chants to chant. These people aren't independent thinkers. They're just sheep being told what to do and doing what they're told. And what amazes me is how it is still tolerated in a civil society, how these people aren't ostracized. People that oppose them oftentimes are too afraid to speak up and just say no. What interests me is that Oklahoma State University is by definition a state facility, and the First Amendment protects someone's free speech rights. However, Supreme Court has ruled that free speech can't be suppressed, but it can be regulated. The Moonies can't approach you anywhere in the airport. They're given a special place to go. Why? In advance of these events, aren't state institutions putting aside a protest section? You can have all the protest you want. It can be right here. They do it for the Democrat National Convention. And for the Democrat National Convention in Chicago this year, the protest pen, as it's called, is literally going to be blocks away from the United Center where the rally is, where the convention is going to be held. So, you know, these people need to be calmly and civilly escorted to the protest pen outside and let those who wish to engage in civil discourse engage in civil discourse.
Look, I completely agree. I mean, you continue to see this where you have a situation where college campuses are allowing the mob to run the asylum, you know? So what we've got to continue to do is have common sense policies. I'm going to go to multiple college campuses here in the next few weeks. We're not going to back down from this tour. We want to bring the message directly to the students. So we're going to continue to do that. And again, you know, college campuses have to be able to protect all forms of ideas to be expressed on their campuses, especially when you're talking about things that are just common sense. We're not talking about anything that is shouldn't be available on the idea in the form of a public idea. So this is I agree with you completely. You've got to allow that marketplace of ideas to exist.
Yeah, you might want to contact your attorney general and develop a policy that will allow protesting, but will also allow not just you, but anyone to speak at a Oklahoma State educational facility. Ryan, we've got about a minute left. Where can people find you and contact you to learn more?
Yes, sir. Thank you for that. Ryan Walters for Oklahoma.com is our website. Very active on Twitter. And again, we're not going to back down. We're going to keep the fight going. We're going to keep making sure that everyone can hear the positions that are common sense and can continue to see the successes that we have. And again, we're not going to back down any of this. And so I appreciate the opportunity and thank you for the work you guys are doing.
Well, thank you. And thanks for coming on State of the Nation. That's Oklahoma State Education Czar and Education Superintendent Ryan Walters. Have a good one. You're listening to State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT.
TNT's Mark Morano.
Politico: German transport minister threatens, quote, indefinite driving bans on weekends to meet climate goals. Yay! Roll out the barrel. There you go. This is the akin to Stalin's five-year plan, the Chinese agricultural revolution, so to speak, where bureaucrats, usually mid-level, enforce these diktats from high-level bureaucrats and politicians from big summits like UN climate summits. And each sector of the economy has goals. And if you fail to meet them, drastic action may be necessary.
Mark Morano on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's News Talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. The Net Zero Con will leave millions of citizens dependent on state handouts. It isn't a theory. It's an agenda. There is no climate emergency. On air 24/7. This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
New York City constituents are well known for voting Democrat, but have they gone too far to the left with the likes of AOC in District 14? Would a moderate Democrat serve the people of District 14 better? Our next guest certainly thinks so. Joining us now is a strategist, investor, and financial advisor, and now Democratic primary challenger to AOC, Marty Dolan. Marty, welcome to State of the Nation. So you've had some critical analysis on the soft on crime policies of the state government in New York, and in particular AOC, that led you to jump into this primary. So tell us how this all happened.
Yeah, so back in the day when I was working in corporate finance, I wrote my college senior thesis on why New York City went broke. And if you look at the situation in the last couple of years, you've had 500,000 people leave New York City. There's a good report on that from State Controller Thomas DiNapoli. And it's not actually the super rich people who are leaving. It's the backbone of New York. It's the people earning $100,000 to maybe $200,000. Maybe there's a mom and a dad working. They might have two kids. And with a 14% marginal tax rate, they just can't get ahead. They can't even keep up. And then when you look at the representation that we happen to have two districts that are kind of right next to each other. One is Congressional District 16, which is represented by Jamal Bowman. And then the other one is Congressional District 14. And when I dug into it, I realized that the people in these districts were really not getting any representation at all. So especially in Congressional District 14, where AOC is currently, and I say currently, the representative. They're just not getting represented. She's using that platform for a variety of positions that are very radical, that support things she's interested in, but they're not pursuing policies that are beneficial for the district.
Marty, I may be something of an anomaly. I'm a conservative that doesn't hate Democrats. In fact, I always say I've never been stabbed in the back by a Democrat, but I'm like a porcupine with all the knives I've taken from Republicans. But I grew up in a political family. My neighbors ran the Republican Party, and we were Republicans. I worked on their campaigns. But my cousins ran the Democrat Party in Syracuse, New York. I worked on my cousin Tommy's mayoral campaign as well. And right. What we need, I'm a solid believer in a two-party system. I do not want to live in a world run only by Republicans. But we cannot have a world that's run by the likes of the AOCs and the Ilhan Presleys and the Ilhan Omars and the Tali Babas, the Squad, and Jamal Bowman. And it would be horrific. What we need are more guys like you on the other side of the aisle with whom we might have some policy disagreements, but we both have the best interests of the country and of the citizens at heart. I used to live in 14. It was Rego Park, but I had an Elmhurst mailing address. And you've also got a lot of people, former and current police and fire in Parkchester and in Throgs Neck up in the northeastern section of the district. There's a lot of support for sanity in that district. Yep. And I'm really excited about your campaign.
Well, the people are very excited. You won't believe the reception I'm getting. Normally, when a politician turns up at a community meeting, it's like, okay, here's another politician. People are coming up to me and hugging me and high-fiving me. And I'm not that charismatic, but they're very excited about the idea that they're going to have a choice. And so when you understand the district, which is, it's more or less half the Bronx and half in Queens, which is, it's very peculiar to have a congressional district that's divided by salt water. But
well,
when you
my
go
district in Brooklyn, when I lived in Brooklyn, it was too. Okay. Carroll Gardens and then Lower Manhattan. How does that happen? We know how.
Well,
that
it's, it, go, it goes back to what the first thing I want to do when I become in Congress is I'm going to sponsor legislation to change the national motto back to E Pluribus Unum, which means of many, we are one. So this was the motto that worked for about 180 years. And then in the 1950s, it was changed to In God We Trust. Now, I don't mind In God We Trust, but E Pluribus Unum is our campaign motto, which is of many, we are one. And so whether it's Republican or Democrat, whether it's Bronx and Queens, or whether it's people with maybe views a little bit further on the far left and a little bit further on the far right, we have to put that together and make this country get back on track. As it is, if you're too far to the left, this we don't live in a minority-driven democracy. The Constitution was set up to protect the majority from the minority and the minority from the majority. And, you know, we have 51 senates. We have 51 assemblies. We have court systems and everything. It's designed for smart ideas that take a long time to develop. It's not designed for radical change. And so the radicals have always been doomed to fail because of that. And now they're failing. And so all we have to do is educate the voters on the importance of the primary. Because what people is, they think about the election, they think about November. But really in New York, we have so many districts that are so democratically weighted. We've got to get people out on June 25th. And I'm confident, very confident, that the current representative does not have a majority support of the people in the district. She had majority support of a very low primary turnout. And if we get the right turnout, we can move this country and the city and the Democratic Party back to the center very quickly.
And didn't Trump just show up in District 14? How was he received there? And do you ever see AOC getting that kind of treatment, or do you ever even see her out there in the Bronx?
So we just finished canvassing. So to get on the ballot, you need 1,250 petitions. We got 7,300 in 17 days, which is just an indication. So just very quickly to go through in the Bronx. It's not fair to make it this simple, but let's make it simple. It's you know, very heavily Latino, very heavily Black. And in Latino, there's Puerto Rican, there's Dominican. It's different. I would say she has no support in the Bronx. And in fact, you have this group coming up called the Trump Democrats. They're Democrats in every way, but they're tired of it. They want law and order. They want safety in the streets. They want the schools to work. They want the trash to pick up. And they don't really care for this social engineering. So then you go over the bridge to Queens. Queens is the world borough. It's got, you know, the 70 languages. It's got the people from all over the world. But guess what? The people who came here from China and who came here from the Philippines and who came here from wherever, they came to get away from socialism. They think the squad is off their rockas. And they're trying to turn New York into Caracas. They're here because they want what they thought the U.S. was, which was a stable, moderate democracy. So now in Queens, what happened is the immigrants have all sort of been drawn like a magnet to Queens because it's a welcoming borough. They have people there who speak almost every language on earth. If you were dropped in New York, you'd go to Queens to find your way around. but now it's out of control because the way it's set up is the people without that many resources get resources from the city, but now those resources are being given to the immigrants, and you have violence on the street. You have the place looks terrible, and people have had enough. So I would turn it around in that I haven't, except for a core group of what I would call AOC liberals in Queens, I think very few people in the district support her policies, and we're going to have a referendum on June 25th, and we'll find out the answer.
All right, great. Let's take a pause right there. We got a headline coming in, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about your campaign and what's going on in New York. This is State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT.
TNT Radio News.
I have some exciting news.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. Israel conducted an early morning retaliatory airstrike in Iran after explosions were reported near Isfahan Airport, according to senior U.S. officials and Iranian officials. Isra Hirsi, the daughter of U.S. Representative Ilhan Omar, was arrested during protests at Columbia University, according to law enforcement sources cited by Fox News.
Dinner time. Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa. Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
Marty Dolan is our guest. You can find him on Instagram at Marty Dolan for Congress 2024. That's F-O-R Congress, Marty Dolan for Congress 2024 on IG. Now, Marty, I saw you on some other interviews and they're trying to compare your social media numbers to, you know, AOC's. And I thought to myself, well, that's a little unfair. AOC, I'm sure that more than half of the people that follow her out of not liking her and wanting to just follow what this insane person says half of the time. And then the other half are probably purchased. And I know that her and many other campaigners in the squad and others were backed by the Justice Democrats to the tune of, you know, massive amounts of money. The Justice Democrats PAC has actually been known to just completely pack primaries, and I think that might be one of the reasons why you know, she doesn't really represent District 14 very well. She's more of a PR face, a cutout, someone that's been purchased and well coached, right, for national purposes rather than for representation purposes. And she's been represented on big media. And what, how are you, you know, so give us a little, your thoughts on this. How are you going to, you know, get, how do you compete with that? And what do you say about some of her recent appearances?
I think, you know, the street doesn't lie. So we're not going to win this election in Silicon Valley or in wine bars or in wherever, you know, her followers are coming from. To win this primary, there are 776,000 residents Congressional District 14, and of that you probably have, you know, 160,000 Democrats, and of that you got to have to turn out, you know, 60,000 to 70,000 of them. We have to win a majority of those, and that's all we care about. We don't really care about being popular in you know, Sausalito. We have to be popular in the Bronx and Queens on June 25th. So and we're playing by the rules, and that means we're basically going to do what I call the folding table strategy, which is we're going to go outside the supermarkets with a folding table and hear what the people have to say. That's representation. Okay. That's where you basically persuade the people that you're going to care about what their lives are about. And maybe you can't help them with everything. Maybe you have to pull something together with a state assemblyman or state senator, but that's the job. Unfortunately, she thinks the job is being a celebrity. And the media's fallen in love with her. So you have the situation with Stephen Colbert the other night, where I think they tripped over a rule that they hadn't checked in a while, which is they had her on for 10 minutes on The Late Show. That's free media. That's worth several hundred thousands of dollars. But it was during an election campaign cycle, and she might have forgotten that she was in an election campaign cycle. And that's against the FCC commission rules. So if you go back to the FCC, which regulates TV stations, it regulates the major networks. And the purpose of that is we don't want to end up with, you know, TV like they used to have in Russia or the, you know, Eastern Europe, where they had one TV station and is controlled by the party. So unfortunately, what's happened is that rule's been bent a little bit. And so you're not permitted under the rule to have an election candidate in an entertainment show unless you offer all the candidates equal time. So that's what we're going to get. We're going to get the equal time. We're going to ask for it. We're going to get equal time from CBS because politics is, it's entertaining, but it's not entertainment. Politics is about making sure that people's views are represented in the legislature, whether it's a state legislature or it's Washington, D.C. And if you do that really well, you do that for a long time, then your voters will back your personal ideas. She's done it the other way around, where she's gotten into office and all she's, you know, talking about are her personal ideas without taking care of her constituents.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious to a lot of people, too. Marty, we're just about out of time here. Again, at Marty Dolan for Congress 2024 on IG. He's also on Twitter, so get on over there and do that one too. Great. But IG is where the action is. So, Marty, take us out. Any final thoughts, parting words, and anywhere else people can find you?
Yeah, my parting words are, New York is great for special moments. That's why you live in New York and you put up with all, you know, there's a lot of difficult things about New York. We can make a special moment. You don't have to complain anymore. On June 25th at 10 o'clock, we're going to order Peking duck because we're going to have a lame duck congressman on June 25th. But you have to do your part. You have to get out and vote in the primary in Queens and in the Bronx.
All right. Thanks so much, Marty. Best of luck with the campaign, and we hope you'll come back and give us updates as it moves on.
Sure.
And yeah, Stephen Colbert and all you guys, you better get Marty on also.
That's right.
Out there. Not that we watched that show, but we would if you were on, Marty. All right. Thanks for being here. This is State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT.
When the world's endangered animals need help most, when their lives are at greatest risk, when they would otherwise be lost, the International Fund for Animal Welfare is there, taking action to rescue the animals we love, to protect them and their threatened natural habitats. But the danger to animals the world over is growing, and the need for your help has never been more urgent. On land, you'll help stop poachers from threatening and killing elephants and big cats for the illegal wildlife trade. In the oceans, you'll help rescue dolphins, whales, and seals from deadly hazards. And you'll help rescue, rehabilitate, and release vulnerable animals when disasters strike. Here at home and around the world, we can't do this work without you. See how you can help animals and people thrive together at joinifall.org.
Hi, I'm Susan Lucci. I never thought about heart disease until I had my own heart event. I had a 90% blockage in my main artery and a 75% blockage in the adjacent artery. I received two stents in my arteries, stents developed through research funded by the American Heart Association. Those stents saved my life. Learn more about the American Heart Association's life-saving work at helpheart.org.
Critically analyzing national affairs.
This is State of the Nation
with Timothy Shea and Brian McClain on today's News Talk.
TNT.
TNT.
If it's Friday on State of the Nation, you know we're going to be talking about the flyover states. And here with his bi-monthly report from Flyover Conservatives is David Whited. You're going to want to go to flyoverconservatives.com. Sign up for all their great content. Better yet, download the app and get it directly on your phone, tablet, or other device. Dave, welcome back to State of the Nation.
Oh, it's an honor to be with you guys. It's a signal of a lot of things. Like you said, it means it's Friday. We're into the end of the week strong. And I always know when I'm talking to you guys that we're wrapping up the week and putting some punctuation on it. So it's good to see you both.
So tell us all the things we need to know out in America's heartland that our mainstream media aren't reporting on from the coast.
Well, one thing I want to point out is, and I guess there's always a thing behind the thing, but when you look at these major cities that are run with sanctuary city kind of policies, whether they're under Democrat control, you look at a San Francisco, you look at even the, you know, a Baltimore, you look at New York City, you know, clearly you guys cover it well, and we've kind of seen what's happened there. Every city and state has now become, you know, a border state, become a border area. Kansas City, Missouri, you know, you think of like, you know, Midwest, and we have it. We have a mayor by the name of Quentin Lucas, and he's been tied to Obama since Obama was in Chicago and was still just a community organizer. And he signaled over the last couple of weeks that we want Kansas City to now move into the realm of being a sanctuary city. We want to take on all the overload that can't be handled in New York. We want to take on the overboard that can't be handled in Denver, which is interesting. He signs out to those cities specifically and say, hey, we want to take this overflow from Denver. And it was his Democratic buddies in New York. Even if he had a heart to say, we want to take on this problem, he's not saying about the problem in El Paso or the problems, you know, in Southern Arizona or some of these places that are completely decimated. When their fellow Democrat cities get hit with a small fragment, you know, of overflow of what's coming over the border, it's a travesty. And so he wants to bring them into Kansas City. We're going to kind of see this unfold. And I think it'll be a main story over the next couple of weeks, because the Missouri Attorney General, we have a history of good attorney generals going back to Josh Hawley. But the state AG office in Missouri has been pretty aggressive. A lot of things you've seen come out of Louisiana and Texas all originated in Missouri in our AG office. And so the threatening legal action from the state of Missouri, I mean, I don't want to like talk down to your audience, but a lot of people, if you're not in the Midwest, you're on the coast, you don't understand. Kansas City is a city that is half Kansas and it has half Missouri. There's a river kind of runs through the middle of it. So it's kind of one of those kind of towns. And there's a lot of tug of war between Johnson County, which is the Kansas side, one of the wealthiest counties in America, that is very leftist in its nature. The eastern side is Missouri. And so people are saying, you know, Kansas City, they think it's all in Kansas, or they Kansas City, Missouri, they're not sure. So it's kind of divided between the two. And so there's going to be a real pushback and battle between a conservative approach from the state of Missouri taking legal action against the mayor of Kansas City, which ran both counties, Johnson and Jackson County, both sides of the city of Kansas City, ran it like a tyrant during COVID. And the goodwill here is definitely not good for the mayor of Kansas City. And so him saying he wants to take in an overflow from Denver and an overflow from some Chicago and some from New York City into Kansas City. And there's plenty of problems he has to fix of his own. And so Democrat mayor goes all the way back to Obama in Chicago. And you're going to see this unfold over the next few days, because this could set a precedent for states being able to push back as a state attorney general against a specific mayor that wants to implement policies in a city that the city can't afford. And the people are not behind. They're not, the Democrats aren't behind it. The Republicans aren't behind it. And so, but you end up with a person in a position of power in a city like Kansas City that, I don't know. It seems like if you had a friend that was in, I don't know, he had like 8 divorces, And he was clearly at the fault of all of them. He's not the guy you would go to for advice on how you run your marriage. And so when you look at a city like Kansas City, you say, okay, what's going on in New York? What's going on in Chicago? How's Denver one of the best cities in the country? And they're able to slowly be destroying that. If you've been to Denver lately, homelessness everywhere. The smell of weed. Went to a game at a Broncos game. You come out and literally it's just clouds of weed, you know, in the city of Denver. And so Quentin Lucas kind of wants to turn Kansas City into a leftist hellhole, you know, the very best that he can. And we'll see what the power and the ability of the state attorney general being able to push back. Andrew Bailey is our current one. See what kind of teeth he has in pushing back there. But that's the trend in our country. Again, I always say often, we don't have blue states. We have red states with blue cities. And I don't, that applies to California. It applies to New York. It applies to Florida. Our whole nation, when you look at the end of the 2020 election, it's a red country with blue cities. And these kind of policies have been tested, tried, and found wanting, been weighed and found wanting. And so we'll see kind of what unfolds there. But the Missouri State Attorney General office is one of the strongest in the country. And we'll kind of see how they're able to push back on a policy that's going to open up the doors and say, come welcome as many as you would like to send us. So we'll see where that goes. There's going to be a big meeting on the 23rd in Kansas City. And so I think that'll set a precedent for a lot of other cities that are kind of on the fringes of, hey, what are we going to do about this? Nobody seems to be doing anything about what's happening at the border, although I think the third individual is now signing on to push back on Speaker Johnson and his role and what he's able to do and his position there. You know, now that they're representative from Arizona has stepped in on that. So maybe something will happen on the border. But in the meantime, as they're flowing in, the cities have their own individual approach. And so, you know, you have federal issue, state issue, and on a city level. So I think that'll be a big thing coming out of flyover country over the next couple of weeks, because it'll set a tone for what will be able to take place in a lot of other towns.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, on this program, I'm glad you brought this one today, Dave, because I think on this program today, we're kind of taking a look at how this phenomenon, it's not really just a phenomenon though that's happening. It's like it's very well orchestrated and planned, and it happens in college systems, and it happens at city and mayoral levels. I would point to the Chicago Council on Global Affairs as an interesting resource. Maybe even the DA over there that you're talking about might want to look into the mission of the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, because they have this thing called the Global Cities Initiative. We deal with that here in Texas as well. I believe Austin, maybe all of our cities here, but I know Austin have mayors that are involved in this Global Cities Initiative. And the Global Cities Initiative is basically an extension of the World Economic Forum, the Davos crowd, and it's like a giant think tank that teaches mayors and legislators and bureaucrats how to create sort of an autonomous government inside of their city, mm-hmm. where they can do things unilaterally, they think, like destroy your entire culture by creating a sanctuary city right there in a flyover state.
Yeah, and that's been happening for quite a while. There's actually, I think I remember back in like 2010 or 11, there's a podcast called Freakonomics. There's a book called Freakonomics, and they kind of, you know, it's fascinating reading. You know, they don't really have a side one or the other, but they kind of break down the math of things. One thing they broke down, this was a long time ago, but it shocked me how much a mayor impacts you. You know, everybody gets all ramped up on the presidential elections. We're all like, this guy is going to make, you know, a big difference. You know, two people that make the biggest difference in the day in, day out lives of most people. One is your sheriff, has the most authority and most power. But number two, the mayor of your town has the biggest impact on, you know, your streets and sanitation and the schools and policing and the safety, like the things that affect you on a daily basis. But people, you know, if you just grabbed a random guy and Wichita, Kansas, or somewhere like that, you ask him who the mayor is, unless he's really bad, you probably don't know. Unless he's like some, you know, outlier, most people don't even know who that character is. And the World Economic Forum has been absorbing them in for a long time. You know, George Soros even famously says it's very expensive and very time consumptive to affect a federal position, even a senator, you know, those, but low levels, DAs, mayors, you know, these people, you can take over a country and shift its thinking. And that's how you end up with a place like Austin, Texas, or somewhere where, you know, the people all feel a certain way, but those in power, like, you don't have to take over the entire airplane, just the pilot. And then everybody's on the plane like, hey, what's happened? Why isn't there air conditioning? Why don't we have this? Why don't we have that? Well, you really just need to get the pilot. And so if you can do, you know, capture that caliber of people in mid to major cities nationwide, man, you can have a much bigger impact than if you worry about, you know, the president. And that's what most people get excited about. That's where most of the action takes place.
Well, Dave, you're exactly right. I'm a native New Yorker. I lived in the state 42 of my 62 years, lived in the city twice. I used to want to retire to the city, and not after Warren Wilhelm destroyed it and Eric Adams is piling on now, unfortunately. But New York, it's a bad rap. People that have never even been there say, I'd never go there. But Kansas City, St. Louis, Chicago, and Detroit, obviously, but Nashville, Memphis, there's a lot of cities in the middle of the country that are just as bad as New York, just as bad as Philly, just as bad as Boston, just as bad as Washington, D.C. And they all have one thing in common, and that's generations of Democrat leadership. I've got a comment on the other big city in Missouri. Tashara Jones as much of a mess as she has made out of St. Louis, she's smart enough to keep her mouth shut here and let her colleague in Kansas City take all the heat. She's sitting back waiting to see how this goes in Kansas City before she proposes more problems in St. Louis. And unlike your situation there, I note that Johnson County is the wealthiest county and it's predominantly Democrat. That's another shift that's taken place in this country. The big lie is that the Republican Party is the party of rich people. That hasn't been true for 30 years now. And unlike Kansas City, East St. Louis in Illinois is profoundly economically distressed. And I think that if they were to offer to take the overflow from Denver or Texas or Arizona in St. Louis, I think there might be a populist revolt in that city.
I think you're 100% right. And if anything, it's a unifying cause of people's at least awareness of this problem. When you got 80% of Americans, regardless of party, 80% at least identify it's a problem. Now, what do we do with it? But they realize you can't take in more. If you take any household, if you have a family that has three of their own children, and then they say they take in three foster kids and they're running it very well. And then you come along and you say, hey, we're going to take 25 more foster kids and put them into your home. You know, that dad, he may be a great dad and he's doing what he's doing fine. He's already doing quite a bit. He's doing above and beyond the call of duty, but he could not possibly father and take care of and raise and keep that number of children in line and create a good product. Everybody knows that fundamentally. And it sees, we see these men on the street videos and they're like, hey, how many would you be willing to take in? Well, me, I can't. And so when you make it personal, people all of a sudden like understand the math of this, of like, hey, there's only so much room in the school and the fire department, you know, everything that's kind of involved, let alone the logistics of language and the things we're trying to do this without assimilating. So people recognize there's a problem. And I think it's big enough that this may outweigh every other issue, you know, over the next 199 days that we're away from, you know, the 2024 election.
It probably should, you know, and Kansas City is lucky to have the example of places like San Diego, places like San Francisco, you know, because you look at San Diego and you see what happens is they pass a bill that makes it such that the police are not able to, you know, check people that are coming illegally at all. On top of that, they'll throw a whole bunch of crime reform on top of it, and you'll end up with a situation that is completely out of hand. You'll be stuck on federal and state money with all strings attached to that. Money will start being siphoned away from public services for Americans in the state and go to illegal aliens, to the point where you'll have to employ people to sit at the airport and say, would you like to go to the next sanctuary city? This one is full, while an American veteran sits out on the sidewalk out there begging for change. This is what happens. So people of Kansas City, take a look around before you allow this to happen. And thank goodness that your DA is fighting this.
Yeah, it's actually the attorney general for the entire state of Missouri. So there should be enough oomph behind it. I think they got a staff of a couple hundred people, you know, that are going to be, you know, on this case and pushing back. They got the mental horsepower to make it happen. And again, you've seen there's been a lot of good things that Texas has joined with, Louisiana has joined with, some of the stuff, even, you know, Missouri against Google. You know, some of these cases all come out of the Missouri AG office. And so I think that they have the backbone to see it through, and they have the people power. We just had a midterm, a minor election a week ago. The turnout was record numbers and was pushing back against these kind of overreaching things like a stadium policy and some of these kind of things. So I think that the groundswell of people are very awake and aware. And I think they're going to have a really big turnout on the 23rd when this thing goes public.
And your state leadership is good. Of course, our good friend Holly Jones is a representative in Missouri. And I think things are heading in the right direction as a state. So hopefully that will trickle down and Kansas City will realize that its interests do not lie on the path it has chosen. Dave, we got a couple minutes left. Give our best to Stacy. Can't wait to see her. Do you have any events planned? Are you going to be out and about? Can people come meet you in person?
We are. We're going to be in Detroit, Michigan for a Reawaken America event. I think it's June 7th and 8th. It's going to be the biggest lineup of the year. Everybody from Eric Trump to you name it, everybody is going to be on the lineup. Look forward to seeing people there. You can check out flyoverconservatives.com or any of our social media platforms and get details on that. This can be a big year. People need to show up and be visible.
They absolutely do. And again, download the app. It's a great app. You get all the info right there, and you get a little notification. There's new content from David and Stacy. Stay tuned for more State of the Nation after Top of the Hour News right here on today's News Talk, TNT.